Evan, what's your favorite thing about Chicago?
Great art scene. Mm. Doc Cinema on the University of Chicago campus is like one of the best repertory houses in the country.
Nice.
And is an old and completely student-run organization going back to the 60s.
I think for me, it's the birthplace of house music.
Yeah, all those West Side clubs in the early 80s, yeah.
So I suppose that is also the art scene.
Sure is.
Such a beautiful part of that city's history. Hello, and welcome to Expected Own Goals, a team that broke Evan Davis last season, will it break him again edition. I am your host, Eric Morgan.
I'm Evan Davis. Whatever. I think the scales of justice righted themselves by that quarterfinal.
Yeah, I think that Orlando did you a big favor.
Keeping me to one shot of Malort ingested, yes.
Yes, not only keeping you to one shot of Malort, but piece by piece laying out the argument you'd been laying out months before, except doing it with goals.
Mm-hmm.
They absolutely battered the Chicago, formerly known as Red Stars, now less communist Stars. But that is then and now. Today we have Leslie Ryder with us, friend of the pod.
From Gal Pal Sports, yes, to talk all things Chicago Stars FC. Can they get back to the playoffs with the lineup that they currently have?
I don't think they can.
But Leslie has a little bit more of an optimistic spin, but most of it is just the three of us kind of staring at each other blankly, trying to think of something positive to gin up about the state of the roster, especially because we are recording this intro on Tuesday, March 11th. We still have no word about Mallory Swanson, which we will discuss in the episode about how the team's prospects change. And today we got the first iteration of ASA's preseason projection model, which paired with Trevor Larner's second pass at his ELO projection model, you average those two bad boys together. Without Swanson, they have a 17% chance of making the playoffs dead last. With Swanson, that goes up to 21%.
Oh boy.
Yeah.
Not saying it's a spoiler, I'll just say that Evan and I very much agreed before these models were released.
So with that, we will go to our conversation with Leslie Ryder of Gal Pal Sports.
Here to join us for our preview of Chicago Stars FC 2025, our old Gal Pal from Gal Pal Sports. It's Leslie Ryder. Hi, Leslie.
Hey, guys. Glad to be back. Thank you for having me.
All right, let's not fuck around here. The last time...
Enough of the pleasantries.
No. The last time you were on was, I think, about 8 or 9 weeks into the season last year.
Mm-hmm.
And we all tried to suss out what was genuinely positive about the performances from the team up to that point and what might have been some fortunate overperformance.
Mm-hmm.
With an eighth place finish, a quarterfinal loss to the Orlando Pride, and a total rebranding, where do you fall on that spectrum now when you look back at 2024?
I think the fact that they got through the season and made it to the playoffs, like without ever dipping below the playoff line, I think it's pretty impressive. I can't explain how it happened in a lot of cases, but they did it. And I think they might have to rely on a little more of that what luck in the beginning of the season, just for reasons that I'm sure we'll get into. But yeah, I feel like last year went pretty well considering where they left off the year before.
Oh yeah. I think no question in regards to how bad the 2023 season was. Frankly, I felt for the Chicago Red Stars or Stars FC fan base, it was a pretty crucial transitional season under new ownership. So regardless of what the underlying performances say, that felt like a kind of make or break season. And I look at like the high of last season being the Wrigley Field game against Bay. That felt like the future of like women's soccer in Chicago.
Yeah.
Do you feel like the fan base vibes from last year were, generally speaking, really pretty good?
I feel like the vibes in total were pretty good. Like the goals that were set out at the beginning of the season by everyone in the front office was like, okay, we're just step one, one step at a time. Let's you know, raise the morale around here, because it was in the basement when they came in, and they wanted to have strong leadership. They wanted to build a culture where people just liked being around each other. And the sense I got, at least from talking to players last season, is that it was a pretty tight group. Like they got along really well, and like new players came in seamlessly, and it seemed like happy family, good vibes.
From the perspective of leadership, were Laura Ricketts, Karen Lietzau, Richard Foytson, Lauren Donaldson more or less on the same page about both expectations from 2024 and their interpretations of the ultimate result? Like, were they all kind of thinking like, oh, we kind of ran into a free one here? Or were those expectations more or less, like, did they think they were going to be able to like slide into the playoffs last year? Or were they all aligned that like, we'll do our best and maybe we get lucky?
I think last year everyone was pretty measured in their like, we're going to put together a solid club. We're going to just make this team a better place for lack of a better word. Like they inherited a club that was just nothing. There was no GM. There was no front office. There was an interim head coach who got fired in the last few weeks of the season. So it was just kind of laying a foundation. And I think they were all on the same page with making last season just from this fundamental place. So like for Lauren, that meant building this defense first mentality. For Richard Foytz, it's, you know, bringing in players who want to fuck with that. And for like the front office, it was just like, all right, how do we come back to this city and say, hey, you may have heard some stuff about us in the past, but we're cool now. Let's have a fun day out at Wrigley. And I think that was a massive success. I think this is a very ambitious front office. Like they want the Chicago Stars to be this team for Chicago. And right now that's hard to do from where they are in Bridgeview.
Do you have a sense of sort of the future as far as Bridgeview is concerned?
From what we learned from Karen Lietzau, having a new facility, a new stadium, a new training facility is like top of mind, priority one. But it's just a matter of finding the right place and finding the community that wants you to be there. And, you know, you're not just like coming in and stomping over everything, being like, I'm putting my stuff here. And I think it's just, it's the thing about being in Chicago is that it's a different city than, say, a Kansas City or a Utah. Trying to find that amount of real estate to put something down is tricky. And yeah, I think it's something they are prioritizing. They want to be in the city. They don't want to be this team out in the suburbs. But I mean, I think their lease comes up pretty soon and they're going to have to figure some stuff out there. But you know, it's still like friendly between the team and Bridgeview somehow after last season. I think it's just kind of out of necessity of like, let's just keep it nice.
You did a great interview with Richard Foytz a few weeks ago that outlaid what he described as 2025 being year two of essentially a three-year rebuild. Three-year rebuilds are very much in vogue right now among GMs. Haley Carter at Orlando has referenced it. If you look at the arc of the Washington Spirit since Michelle Kong took over, that's been a three-year cycle. Mark Parsons just gave an interview saying he's expecting Angel City to be contending for titles at the end of 2027. And with Chicago here, I wonder if you could elucidate what Foytz thinks year two is intended to accomplish, thinking from that three-year viewpoint, because they stole a playoff spot last year, and this season not seeing a lot of acquisitions that could potentially make an impact in the roster.
Yeah.
Not seeing a lot of spending or intent to spend. And there aren't really any excuses anymore for Laura Ricketts because she's now had two full off seasons and she has an infrastructure built in. So what do you sense is the objective for, if we are thinking about this 3-year rebuild window, what do you get the sense the objectives are for year two?
Yeah, well, it's really just interesting conversations with Richard Foyt, both just like on my own interviewing him and then on the first day of preseason. Man knows how to dodge a question, let me tell you.
Those fucking Swiss.
But
pick a side.
I get the sense that year two is about just developing and building on this foundation that they've made. They've got stability now. They've got some identity to them. They've got players who are with that and want to play for that identity. And I think now it's just more about how can they get more success with it. Not necessarily in like a win championships way, but like in a let's score more than one goal a game kind of way. And what I found interesting is he kept referring to wanting to make clubs sustainable. Like he wanted to build for like a sustainable future of like, you know, if we're spending for free agents, you know, we're not going to be able to sustain that for the years to come. I think time will tell if that's the move that needed to be made. There were some depth pieces that could have been signed in the offseason. Some defenders would have been nice. But I don't know. I think I want to believe in just the time of preseason for this team to know each other a little bit better. They've got players that are, you know, 1 year older and a little bit wiser. And, you know, hopefully they can turn that into better results. But we'll see.
Do you feel like there is an almost unfair burden to repeat and make the playoffs again because of what was accomplished last year? Or do you feel like the club have a more level-headed sense of that being like maybe an overperformance for where we are? And that if we don't make the playoffs this year, that actually isn't a problem as far as our long-term vision is concerned.
Well, I mean, I think the goal now is we have to get back to the playoffs, where it's like we got there last year. There's no reason, no excuse for why we can't return with what they've got with them. Yeah, I think it was Lauren Donaldson who was talking that up on preseason day one, where he's just like, yep, coming back.
I can see the continuity of identity, mm-hmm. and I can see the continuity of the stability from a personnel perspective. I do wonder about stability from a performance perspective, because yeah. as we saw, they snuck into the playoffs, but 12th on expected points, 13th on non-penalty XG differential. And for me anyway, there are still a lot of questions about who's in the 11, who is going to make the most sense together, and how they manage to find a measure of cohesion in 2025. Sam Staub isn't going to be available for at least the first half of the season. Mallory Swanson has not reported to preseason camp yet. I don't know what you are able to divulge in public, if you know anything about that.
It's like, if I had anything to divulge, I certainly would, but it's been no news since the initial press release. So we're all just kind of like, hope she's well. Hope she's feeling all right and has everything she needs. And, you know, hope she can make it back to the team.
So what does Donaldson think he can get out of this group that will allow them to get back to the playoffs? What shape does that take?
I think there's going to be more emphasis on possession and control, just because last season that was such an Achilles heel for them. I think I've never seen Lauren so like disappointed after a game as when they played North Carolina at home, and they could not pass their way out of a barn. But yeah, it's definitely something that he's aware of and he wants to get better. And I'm hoping now that they've signed a couple of midfielders that they can form just some sort of shape to not be panicking and just be like, I don't know, long ball. That's
especially because the sort of the two most important elements of the long ball attack, Sam Staub, who is both by the numbers and I think probably by everyone's eye test, the best long range passing center back in the league, and Mal Swanson, who's one of the better receiving strikers in the league of long balls, both might be absent. It feels like a turn toward a possession style is almost like being forced on Lorne more than anything else. Do you feel like that is the impetus behind signing Maitane, and how do you see her deployed?
I mean, I think she's going to be a midfielder. They, like, I know she can play center back, so I do think there's a question mark of if she will start the season there. But if they do, it kind of goes against this thing that they're trying to do together. So I don't know for certain, but I think she would be best in perhaps like a defensive midfield position to just kind of be that little bit of a link from the back line to a little bit further forward, because that was just a place that they suffered. They suffered last year.
Truly.
It wasn't fun. It probably was frustrating for them, but it was just something that you would watch it just be like,
Just staying on the defensive midfield point, they had three number sixes clock over 1,100 minutes. And if Julia Grosso had come just a couple weeks earlier, she probably would have surpassed that too, even though she's intended to be a little bit further forward. And then if you have Maitane in the mix there, that's five players for probably two spots on the field. Where do you see, whether based on performance last year or from what you understand of things coming out of preseason, where is Lauren's head at about how he sees that midfield taking shape, particularly if he wants Chicago to be a team that can keep the ball a little bit better?
Yeah, it's not entirely clear. Unfortunately, we don't get a ton of looks at the Red Stars when we're the Stars, when we're in preseason. Like they had a preseason game a couple of days ago. No idea how it went. No idea who lined up where. So we're kind of in the dark about it. But I mean, I don't know. If we're looking at who they brought in, I hope the plan is to put Julia Grosso in a place where she is more comfortable and can actually do Julia Grosso things. I want to say I'm intrigued by where Manaka Hayashi ends up. If she's also young, so it might not be she's in the starting 11 right away. But they have a lot of new faces that they brought in for the midfield on their preseason roster, and I'm really intrigued to see if one of the non-roster invitees makes the cut. There's also just a lot of forwards that they brought in that didn't get a ton of playing time. Like, I mean, Sarah Griffith is still, she got signed to an extension. So like, I know they want to use her, but I don't think they've found her happy place yet. And I feel like she can have a spot in that midfield, but I feel like no one's really wanted to try it consistently, like since she's been here.
She also only signed a short-term contract, right?
Yeah, yeah. Either she fits into the plan or she doesn't, and she goes.
So it is
else.
Really wait and see with her, you sense?
Yeah.
It feels like this team, given the personnel on hand, has a lot of sort of in-betweener, like fullbacky. Like, I think Natalia Kuika is probably the perfect embodiment of the kind of player they have a lot of, which is a lot of like tweeners who can, and Maitane is this too, who can kind of play two positions, but maybe aren't like superlatively great at one or the other, which allows you both flexibility and uncertainty over like where these players should start. Do you think there's a world in which Lorne ends up because of the issues with progression, playing a back three with like or five with wingbacks and a more fundamentally defensive, a 5-4-1, a 3-5-2, something like that. Do you think that's possible, or do you think he's pretty wedded to a back four? Because he was last season.
Yeah, he was pretty consistent with a back four. I don't know. I feel like I'm not much of a tactics person, but I feel like a back three takes some sauce that the Red Stars might not necessarily have right now. Back five sounds like they like playing that kind of like wing back situation. Mm-hmm. Some of the conversations around the Stars have been like Jenna Bite could crack some skulls going back, and mm-hmm. like she could be fun there.
Yeah, exactly. It feels like they have so many, like Queek is a perfect example of like is both dangerous as a center back just breaking mm-hmm. plays up and potentially on the wing moving the ball vertically down the wing. So yeah, like a Jenna Bike and Natalia Kuika right side isn't like the craziest thing I've ever heard.
Yeah.
It just feels like you might get maybe more out of a Taylor Mollum at a wing back position.
Yeah, and like, Taylor Mollum's got she's got some speed to her too, which is mm-hmm. one of those things that I was watching her last season. She's like, oh, where do you go? What were you doing on the bench last season?
I mean, the only way you kind of get it to work is if you convert a Bike or another player like that to a wingback, because I just don't see where the bodies come from to get five defenders in that back line. You know, between Kuika, Mollum, Hannah Anderson, Cameron Biegalski, like without Staub there, there That's just true. Isn't a lot of like dedicated defensive line personnel, especially if you're really yeah. committed to like using Maitane.
Chardonnay Curran has played in the back for them mm-hmm. on occasion.
So is she somebody that Lauren trusts for something like that?
It's something that I've been just tussling with of like, this is meant to be defense first mentality. And mm-hmm. I don't know that why do you only sign? Why do you only start preseason with four healthy defenders? Now you're down to three because Queek is hurt.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. So as much as I can hope and dream for some fun on the defensive line, it's just like, I don't know how they're going to get out of this one.
Those crazy kids.
Chicago last year, I remember thinking in one of the more, and I understand there were personal aspects to this, primarily Penelope Hockey wanting to play closer to her hometown. Mm-hmm. But Chicago got a fairly hefty fee, I think $350,000 for Penelope Hocking. And it doesn't seem like a lot of that has necessarily been reinvested in the squad immediately. And particularly when it comes to goal scoring, bar Ludmila, with Mallory Swanson's status unknown, where do you really see the goals coming from for this team? And do you see the possibility of more signings coming in either before the start of the season or in the summer window?
Yeah, I mean, I know Lorne was in favor of more signings.
I bet he was.
Rick was a little more tempered on that. I think the quote was, have you ever met a head coach who doesn't want more players? So, yeah, I do think the team is being unusually conservative in their signings. And I think they're kind of hoping for things to come to fruition with the folks they already have. But they I don't think they need to break the bank to plug a few holes on their roster.
Yeah, I mean, Foyts might do well to ask why the daughter of Joe Ricketts is crying poor here. I think there's probably some money to go around. Ludmila, obviously, like, her reputation precedes her internationally with what she does with Brazil. She looked sharp in limited appearances at the end of the year for Stars FC. Let's just say, for the sake of argument, mm-hmm. that Swanson might not be available at the start of the season. is Ludmila somebody who's also going into her age 30 season, somebody who can lead the line and offer you 7, 8, 10 goals and maybe be the focal point of an attack that could be successful?
I mean, I think I was liking what I was seeing between in the opportunities when you had Mal, Denise Joseph, and Ludmila on a line together. Like there was some really fun stuff coming out of that combination that, you know, didn't necessarily result in a lot of goals just because they barely knew each other. They had very limited time together in training, which has not been helped, I suppose, by the Swanson situation. But, you know, you got to work with what you can. I mean, Allie Schlegel is kind of, I mean, she tied Mel Swanson in the golden boot race for the team and got that like blue collar tenacity that the team loves. I don't know that she could be the focal point, but I see her as the, like, if Ludmila is the commander, Schlegel's the XO and doing all she can to support.
Mm-hmm. That's good.
I suppose we should say R.I.P. Gene Hackman, because obviously RIP that Gene was a Crimson Tide, Crimson Tide reference.
Yeah.
So, what? I don't know. I mean, I feel
that
like
is
we're
my
kinda
reaction to the Red Stars in general.
This,
like,
yeah, the thing when I was trying
like,
to.
Ah,
every time I look at this roster, I leave more perplexed than when I started looking at it. There is just such a like mushy middle of talent who I can't really see a lot of separation within positional groups about mm-hmm. who stands out and who genuinely could put in performances that do not reflect how things went a year ago.
Yeah.
And maybe that just is sort of what we have to face with Chicago Stars FC. Like, you hope for the best, but maybe you prepare for the worst.
Yeah.
Is that too doomy? Am I being too doom and gloom here?
I think it's fair to feel this just emptiness, hollowness when you stare at it, you're just like, what am I supposed to do with you?
Right. Yeah.
As I was preparing to, you know, for this episode and sort of just pouring over the Chicago, well, we can call them the Red Stars because that's what they were last year, the 2024 Red Stars roster, one of the things that really jumped out to me is that the sort of position weighted net G plus, which is a fancy way of just essentializing, but they only had 3 outfield players who were in the positive who played over 1500 minutes, and 2 of them are Stam Staab and Mal Swanson. And now that Quick is done, or has done herself a little injury that I was not aware of coming into today, they have no players who played over 1500 minutes who were net positives on the field last year. Does that feel like unnecessarily harsh, or does that kind of like catch the vibe right of where the Stars are right now?
The thing with this team is that despite all that, they still managed to put stuff together.
You're not wrong. That's the
and
crazy
put the ball
thing
in the net. Like, their money was in their ability to keep a clean sheet and score a goal. And that was that kept them in the playoff race. And it works, but it doesn't win you trophies. And I think they want to be giving themselves better opportunities to score goals. And I don't know how it's gonna happen. I want to trust the process. Who am I to say no to Lauren Donaldson? But yeah, I'm just really intrigued to see how it goes.
Yeah, they broke Evan last year, just as they...
As everyone well knows.
They sure did.
Yes.
the great Malort incident of November 2024 shall live on in memory.
They legit broke Evan last year. What do you think the odds are that they break Evan again this year?
I would not be surprised if they manage to still get into the playoffs. And even I look at last season and like they were as high as like 6th place coming down the stretch, and they just kept dropping results. And I think with a little more power to them, a little more knowledge, just a little more know-how, maybe they can keep that spot this time around. And we're going to have to get you a bottle of Malort because I think it might break you a little bit.
Well, I was going to ask, maybe right here, right now, you tell me what I have to do if the Reds, if Chicago Stars FC makes it to the playoffs
for a second year in a row. Think on that. Yeah. Let's ask the question that we asked before this, but we'll think about a punishment for Evan should this come to pass. Okay, so you're putting yourself in the shoes of Lauren Donaldson. What is the one thing that is keeping you up at night or causing you nightmares as you prepare for this season?
I think it's the lack of defenders. I think that's a big part of it. Mal not being at camp. I don't think that gives him nightmares. I think he knows her too well. Of like she doesn't need camp. She's fine. She can roll up for the first time this season, 5 minutes to game time, and I think he'd trust her to net the game winner that day. But I mean, I do think the defensive puzzle is going to bother him just because he is the man of defense first, and he's got no defenders.
Yeah. And puzzle is the right word to use because all of these pieces could fit in a lot of different ways, but how do you find the right way for them to all fit at the same time? All right, moment of truth. Where are they finishing in the table?
I think they can hit sixth.
Oh, wow.
I mean,
I love the swagger of this.
That is the kind of bullish optimism.
They are alarming at times, and yet they find a way to prevail. So I'm gonna say sixth. You know, we're not in top four. We're just a little more comfortable in the playoff position.
Eric,
this is gonna come as no surprise. I have them 14th. I have them finishing dead last, and it's not that they couldn't make me look like an absolute idiot again. They absolutely could. It's much more, I just look at the uncertainty present in this roster, and I don't see any team that has bigger questions right now, particularly with Swanson not necessarily available for a period of time and with Staub out. Like, San Diego have big question marks, too. But they seem to be slightly fitter. It's just, and like, there are lots of teams with it. But for me, I have them 14th. I really worry that the bottom falls out of what was a pretty astonishing and at times lucky season last year.
Yeah, if you will recall, that home stretch of regular season games involved a couple of wins where they got absolutely destroyed.
Battered.
But still managed to like squeak through with like a one goal victory. And those performances very much felt like Ben don't break to me, and were basic. The team's basically running it back, and so for me, especially if Swanson is not available for any period of time, I don't know how it all fits together. I mean, because that's the other part is like I don't see where the player who helps you beat variance is, you know. So they're 14th for me as well.
Chicago spits on your statistics and logic.
I mean,
something that Chicago does very well. To be fair,
my thought: you picked Chicago to finish sixth, which I love. The Chicago Star has 6 points. I think Evan Davis, if they finish sixth, owes us a red star tattoo on his body. A 6-pointed Chicago Red Star. I will happily chip in to pay for this. How do you feel?
I like this.
What say you, Leslie Ryder?
I'm in.
Okay. I think we put inside the Red Star Leslie's initials, just LR. for finishing
so
sixth.
You always know.
So you always know.
Point of order. Am I allowed to choose the place on my body where this tattoo goes?
Oh, yes.
Yes, obviously.
Okay. Great. Let's virtually shake on it.
Oh, this is...
If sixth Lord. Place, then red
if
star.
If sixth place, 6-pointed red star, LR.
Leslie, you are one of our favorite people. It's always such a joy to talk to you. And you can find her at Leslie Ryder on social media. Read everything at Gal Pal Sports and listen to Football Is Wife, which I don't feel like I've seen you guys in my feed of late.
We are in the midst of a relaunch for the show. So we're getting there. The off season is long and full of terrors, but we're making it.
Don't we know it? keep your eyes peeled for the return of Football Is Wife in your podcast catcher of choice. Leslie Ryder. Yes, Eric?
I personally can't wait to have Leslie back on in, say, 8 to 10 weeks when the Chicago Red Stars are sitting in fifth.
And I just go on like,
Evan is sitting in a bucket of himself because he has begun to disarticulate.
Until that moment, we will say farewell to Leslie. Thank you so much for being on your show. Yep. Fan-fucking-tastic.
Oh, Leslie's the best. And she's so gracious for coming on this pod. So often when the team she is here to talk about is often maligned by this pod.
Fair. I mean, you know, I think the heart of her argument is that this team does have a lot of heart, and I believe that they do have a lot of heart.
I think that's right.
You know, it's just unfortunately not constructed in a way that makes me feel comfortable saying that they are going to get back to the playoffs. But, you know, it's a long season. We'll see how things look in early November and whether or not I'm going to have a tattoo.
Yeah, that's right.
Choosing on my body.
I mean, this happens, by the way. Look, all the models in the world, we might be wrong. There was an Arizona Diamondbacks team that made the playoffs with like a negative 100-something run differential. Bad teams can find ways.
They will have to do something historic in order to accomplish the goal of playing November soccer. So cross that bridge when we come to it in a little less than 8 months. But for now, there is another season preview in your feed today on Bay FC, talking with Anna DeKosh of Everything Bagels. So keep your ears peeled for that. And tomorrow we will be back with a Kim McCauley double feature talking about the Portland Thorns and the North Carolina Courage. So watch out for that dropping into your feed tomorrow morning. In the meantime, do everything that you're supposed to do with podcasts. Rate, reviews, follow, tell your friends. Sign up for our Patreon. $6 a month, $60 a year gets you 4 bonus episodes every single month, as well as access to our Discord server and our semi-regular YouTube live streams. Email us at expectedowngoals@gmail.com. That's the letter expectedowngoals@gmail.com. And be sure to follow us on social media at xowngoals. That's the letter xowngoals.
All right. Bye.